Support for MPB comes from the Mississippi Museum of Art in Jackson. What Became of Dr. Smith by artist Noah Satterstrom is on view now through September 22, 2024. Learn more at msmuseumart.org.
This podcast is a local production of Mississippi Public Broadcasting. It's made possible in part by contributions from podcast listeners. Please consider making a contribution by going to the Donate Now tab at mpbonline.org. Thanks for your financial support.
This is Larry Morrissey. Thanks for listening to the podcast version of the Mississippi Arts Hour. The show is broadcast on MPB's statewide radio network on Sundays at 5 p.m. For access to all our past shows, please subscribe to the Arts Hour on your favorite podcasting app.
Deep South Dining is the show all about the culture of Southern flavor, from fried chicken and collard greens to shrimp and grits and a glass of sweet tea. Subscribe now to the podcast using any podcast app or download our MPB public media app.
We're back on the Arts Hour. I'm Larry Morrissey, and our guest today is Patrick Parker, and we're talking about his new book that he's co-authored with Ernest Herndon called Paddleways of Mississippi. So we were talking about the Mississippi River before the break. The thing I think that you point out is, you know, kind of related to John Ruskie, is that even though we have, you know, our state's named after this and this river is right there, it's not the easiest to access for the public, right? It's kind of limited to even to get to the river.
Right. I think it was Ruskie that termed the Mississippi River a wilderness between the levees. And so when we're looking at a map or flying over, we see this stripe of water and just think that's barges and shipping and that sort of thing. But it's actually a honest-to-goodness wilderness. And you will see all sorts of wildlife. There's great fishing. And you just have to be able to navigate it, whether you use a motorboat or paddle like the Indians did, like the settlers did, that sort of thing. All of the rivers in the book were chosen because they were navigable. These are the rivers that European-descended settlers traveled into the Mississippi Territory on. And so Mississippi was settled by way of these arteries. Commerce went on these arteries. Natchez became the wealthiest city in this hemisphere simply because it was right next to the cotton fields and the river.
Yeah. Have you or Ernest, did you guys... have you done any paddling on the Mississippi yourselves? Or
I think Ernest has. I have only done one of the Sunday fun deals with John Ruskie.
Yeah. But it's a very different experience from people who've gone on the Okotoma or...
Right.
It's a little more athletic of a thing.
Yeah. It is, and the Quapaw Canoe has these Voyager-style canoes that will hold, I don't know, 12 or 14 people. And so there's a lot of people helping you to propel, and they're very stable and sturdy.
Right. Kind of very wide in the middle. And right. Yeah, they're not going to tip over for anything.
Right.
Yet. Yeah. The other thing that you guys point out in the book is kind of like, you know, the river's always moving, right, through time. And so it's always leaving stuff behind. We just listened to Scott Dunbar, who lived on Lake Mary, one of the oxbows. And you guys talk a little bit about kind of some oxbow exploration. Talk about what those are and what's distinctive about them.
So as the Mississippi River, it has not always been where it is now. It has meandered and shifted back and forth, east and west. And as it moves, it leaves behind twisty, snaky footprints. In some of those footprints, they will fill with water and become a lake. And that's an oxbow, is a sort of a crescent moon-shaped place where the river used to be that's filled with water. Some of them are completely cut off from the river. Some of them are seasonally cut off from the river. But like Lake Mary, I grew up fishing at Lake Mary. And the same applies to the lakes, the oxbows along the river. As I said about the Mississippi River, you'll see fantastic wildlife there. They are great paddling opportunities and fantastic fishing.
So it's kind of more, rather than point A to point B, like on a river, an oxbow would be more kind of like kind of a slow exploration or something,
right,
kind of going around the, yeah.
You could canoe where you like, so long as you're on a lake or flat water. In fact, that's what where I would point beginners, utter beginners, is get your start on a lake. I have done a lot of paddling for the past 40 some odd years at Lake Tangipahoa at Percy Quinn State Park. I have canoed on Lake Walthall, Lake Lincoln, and so those are great places to figure out what a canoe, how a canoe moves and responds. Then as a further point of interest, a challenge for your skills, you find a local river. Like, we moved from paddling on at Percy Quinn State Park to paddling on the Bogachitta. That was the next natural progression for Southwest Mississippi. And I put a epigram at the beginning of the Bogachitta that implies that for a lot of outdoorsmen in this area, the Bogachitta was the beginning of their outdoor life. I think the Bogachitta has been an amazing opportunity for wildlife spotting, fishing. You see the endangered sturgeon that spawn there. Every so often, somebody will inadvertently catch one and have to release it, but they report them because they're a protected species, and they spawn in these rivers that connect to the Gulf.
So they're coming up the Bogachitta from the sound,
right,
and working their way all the way up. Wow.
Yeah.
So it's kind of like our salmon, I guess.
Right. Southern salmon.
Yeah. Not quite as good tasty, I imagine.
Probably not.
You're listening to the Arts Hour. My guest today is Patrick Parker. He's the co-author of a new book on University Press called Paddleways of Mississippi. We were talking about the Mississippi River. Now, kind of moving into the next section, you know, the closest to the Mississippi are kind of is like the Delta system of that you were mentioning. Because the Yazoo is like the big daddy of
right.
that one. It seems like they're and you go into detail in each one of these to kind of tell the unique characteristics, but
right.
There's a lot of kind of man-made, there's like a lot of control over those rivers because of
right.
the flooding and that, unlike some of the other rivers in the state.
Right. The Delta is a super interesting area from every direction that you look at it, whether you're looking at the commerce and the barges or the flood control efforts or the wildlife, and or from history, a historical perspective. The Delta, or the slightly more middle region, is sort of the crossroads of European descended Americans and Native American civilization. It's like the crosshairs. And it's also a crosshairs of Civil War action. the Gibraltar of the South, Vicksburg, it was widely known that it was impregnable. There was no way that it was going to fall. And so there's a fair portion of the book that is dedicated to how the Southerners and how the Northerners used the oxbows and the bayous and all the tiny little waterways throughout the Delta trying to approach or trying to defend Vicksburg.
Yeah, and kind of some of these historical remnants that you can still see even
right.
Over 150 years later. It's pretty amazing.
It is.
Yeah. In terms of the Delta, though, a lot of y'all's descriptions in the books are like, well, this part of it is, you know, this 20 miles is a channeled, you know, kind of boring straight ahead thing. But then when you get to this part, it was, it's very interesting. And so one that I didn't know about that you talk about, I think it's on the Yalabusha River, mm-hmm. It's like a French, is it Malmaison? Is that
right?
Am I pronouncing that right?
I think so, yeah.
Which is, are you familiar? I don't know if that was you or Ernest.
That was Ernest, but oh. I know a bit about it.
Yeah, that sounds like a really cool little space in there, yeah.
It is a lot of the waterways there are channelized, and if you look at a satellite map, you'll see long stretches of straight ditches. And the idea in the, I guess, 40s was to, or maybe a little bit earlier than that, was to shut down this seasonal flooding that was making life intolerable in Mississippi. So they built the flood control lakes, four of them, at the headwaters of, or towards the headwaters of the tributaries to the Yazoo, so that all that water could be contained and would not flood into the Yazoo.
And so that's Sardis Lake,
Enid,
Grenada,
and the Arkabutla.
Arkabutla, okay, very good. That's like the trivia extra points for that one, yeah.
Right.
That's good. But this Malmaison wildlife management area, it sounds really beautiful. And just, it's kind of like this little tucked away piece right there on the edge of the Delta.
He describes it as a fairy wonderland sort of, because you're canoeing for a great distance, basically in a ditch, and then up from the horizon grows a forest, old forest of oak and hickory and gum and pine. It is a wonderland, and this is approximately the area, as I understand it, that Teddy Roosevelt, they brought him hunting the famous teddy bear.
The famous teddy bear story. Yeah, yeah,
yeah.
It's amazing to think there are these kind of like little remnants of the pre-contact Delta that are out there still, because you think of the Delta as farmland, but there are these little spots that you can get a sense of what it used to be like. Yeah, it's pretty amazing. Let me just skip to kind of down to Southwest Mississippi, and one of the trips that you talk about your own experiences with is going with the French again. Where's all this French coming from? This is amazing. It's Bayou Pierre, which I've heard of for years. It's around Port Gibson, but I never knew about people paddling it.
So Bayou Pierre gets its start somewhere around Hazelhurst, maybe a mile or two west of Hazelhurst. And all these tiny little streams come together into Bayou Pierre. And as I was looking forward, like in our table of contents, what we were going to write next, I was sort of trepidatious about Bayou Pierre because I didn't know anything about it, know anything to write about it. And Ernest had traveled it and written some in Canoeing Mississippi, so I decided that I was going to go and throw a canoe in and take myself down it. Well, just like a lot of the rivers in southwest Mississippi, especially the Homachita, Bayou Pierre has suffered some head-cutting erosion issues and has become very wide and very shallow and very sandy. So my wife took me to this bridge. I think it was Carter Hill Road, maybe. It was just outside of Hazelhurst. And we got the canoe in the water, and I waved my triumphant goodbye. But before I was out of sight around the corner, around the bend, I was dragging my boat.
Oh, no.
So this trip alternated between stretches of paddling in a wonderland and portaging. And I said in the book, anybody that tells you that they enjoy portaging is lying to you. But it stretched my canoeing day out to where I was late meeting my wife, and she had fallen asleep in the sun under a bridge waiting for me. But Bayou Pierre is also spectacular because of the prehistoric, petrified wood and fossils throughout and along it.
Yeah, and you mentioned, I think, geodes and some distinctive clays as well. Yeah, it sounds beautiful. And
colorful clay. There is also talk of one of the conservation agencies in Mississippi buying up land along Bayou Pierre and using it to try to improve access and make it a truly navigable waterway again.
That would be amazing. And it's so close to the central Mississippi area, very, very accessible for people.
Right.
That would be great. This is Larry Morrissey. Thanks for listening to the podcast version of the Mississippi Arts Hour. The show is broadcast on MPB's statewide radio network on Sundays at 5 p.m. For access to all our past shows, please subscribe to the Arts Hour on your favorite podcasting app.
On Southern Remedy Healthy and Fit, you get information about foods you should eat to stay in good health and tips on how to stay active. I'm Josie Bidwell, host of Southern Remedy Healthy and Fit, an associate professor of preventive medicine at the University of Mississippi Medical Center. Listen to the show every Monday at 11 or subscribe to the podcast by searching for Southern Remedy with your preferred podcasting app.
We're back for the final segment of the Arts Hour. I'm Larry Morrissey, and we're talking with Patrick Parker today. He's a co-author of Paddleways of Mississippi, brand new book about paddling, canoeing, kayaking, all the different rivers and streams of Mississippi. One interesting, in terms of your experiences, one reoccurring a cast of characters, I guess, that is with you is Boy Scout Troop 124 from Macomb, Mississippi.
That's right.
Makes it along the. Tell me about them and their accompanying you on some of these adventures.
So there are several stories in the book about Boy Scout Troop 124 from Macomb, Mississippi, and the connection there is my father was scoutmaster about 100 years ago, and all of my brothers. All of his family wound up being scouts under him and coming through Scout Troop 124. And then, as I was saying earlier, my oldest son, it came time for him to get into scouts, and he joined Troop 124. And pretty soon, I had been roped into becoming the scoutmaster for Troop 124. So that really reignited the love and the passion for the outdoors and for that type of adventure that I had had when I was a child that I had forgotten about while I was doing career and all that. So we have taken the scouts canoeing on Percy Quinn Lake, Lake Tangipahoa. And just like the progression when I was a kid, We went from Percy Quinn to Bogachitta. We did a small paddle on Tapasaw Creek, which is a challenge to get to because it's completely landlocked by private landowners. But we had a landowner that let us access the river. There's a story about the confluence of Bogachitta and Tapasaw being like the ancient Greek story of Scylla and Charybdis. It's like a giant sea monster and a giant whirlpool, and you're supposed to have to sail between them.
Mm-hmm.
Well, folks had told us that the confluence of Tapasaw and Bogachitta, for some reason, was just incredibly dangerous, and they didn't want to go through that. But we paddled Tapasaw, and I was cautious getting to that confluence, and we just sailed right through it. So the sea monster must have been asleep that day. We did a 50-miler canoe trip with the older Boy Scouts at one point from Holmesville to Franklinton, Louisiana, over the course of 2 or 3 days. And it was all the – each trip has its own interests, and you see the same stuff every time, but you see it from a different point of view. Somebody said you can't step in the same river twice, right?
Right.
Well, on this particular journey, the first day and a half or so had gone swimmingly. It was great. And we got to a sandbar, and just beyond the sandbar where we rested for lunch, there's a westward turn in the river about 90 degrees. And we ate our lunch, and everything was great, and we got in our canoes and pushed off, and the current swept us around that turn. Well, about that time, one of the scouts began screaming because he had discovered leeches between his toes. Leeches are not a common problem on the Bogachitta or any of our rivers, but you'll see them every so often. And they're not really that big a deal. They have gotten a gruesome reputation from, like, Stephen King movies and that sort of thing.
Yeah.
But this kid dropped his paddle and started picking the leeches off of his toes right as we swept around that corner. So at about 5 miles an hour, we ran, T-boned a submerged tree, and it stopped our canoe dead still and threw me out of the canoe. So it was an adventure after that. We managed to get pulled back over to the bank, and nobody else had leeches on them.
Amazing.
Just one guy.
So in terms of bringing a group of kids out, do you feel like did you make paddlers out of them, or at least people like they would go with you the next time or whatever, you know, like became something that they liked rather than something to avoid?
Right. The Boy Scouts typically do their canoeing as part of the programs that the Boy Scouts programs, like for summer camp. They do flat water lake canoeing.
Yeah.
And so Bogachitta is a class one river, which means basically flat water. But there are tiny segments like that one that I just mentioned where it almost creeps up on class two where you could get some challenges. So it's a great step up, a great progression, so that they develop their skills on the lake and then get to enjoy being swept around a corner all of a sudden or being pulled through an area where the river goes from being wide to being deep and the current changes.
Mm-hmm. Very cool. We're talking with Patrick Parker today. He's a co-author of Paddleways of Mississippi, a brand new book out on University Press, co-authored with Ernest Herndon. Now, Patrick, I was talking to my coworkers before we came over today and saying, you know, I've got a paddling expert in the studio today. So I was thinking about people who are listening who maybe think, boy, that sounds interesting, but I've never done it. And so I was asking them, what would you ask? And you probably know what number one question is. What about the alligators, Patrick? Alligators. Yeah.
They're like dinosaurs, right? And they're at the tip top of everybody's mind. There's a chapter or two about, or not a chapter, there's a section or two about alligators in the book, and some record alligators that various people have caught. But for the most part, in fact, when I met Ernest, I asked him that very question, what about the alligators? And he was largely dismissive of it because they're not typically a problem. For years, like years ago, they were hunted. And so their size progression was limited. Now they're not hunted, they're protected, but they're still managed. So we don't really know how big one could get. So they could get, like, the Nile crocodiles are obviously much larger, and they pose a problem for humans. But like in Percy Quinn State Park in Lake Tangipahoa, there can be dozens of little, like, forearm-sized. And frequently you'll see the eyes shining out in the lake because some ill-advised people will, like, throw them a hot dog and try to lure them up or something like that. But they realize that they might get a morsel of something. And so about sunset, they will show up, and there'll be little specks of two eyes here and there in the water. But they wind up being, like, a foot long.
Yeah. All right, you're not putting people at ease yet. So but in terms of, like, when you're out on the river and you're seeing them, they're not coming at you. They are in the environment, but they're not going to interact with you.
They are part of the environment.
Yeah.
But like a snake, they're as cautious of you as you are of them because you're four times taller than them. So you look like a big deal to an alligator, I guess. So far as I know, there's not been very much ever incident between alligator and human. Part of the reputation of the alligator comes from the Nile crocodile, which is large enough and that sort of thing that it can kill, and it does kill humans. But that's
like the crocodile, not the
crocodile, yeah. And it's thousands of miles away.
But in terms of just being out in the river, my experience has been you see them, they'll scatter or move along when they see you.
Right.
You kind of move along. You're not going at them. You're not, you know, you're just kind of respecting a distance and
right.
Things
respect,
are fine.
Respect the distance. Go around them. They won't come at you. The only time that we've gotten alligator to come at us close enough to actually see it good was on a alligator tour in Louisiana, and they would throw giant marshmallows at them. They said nobody knows why the alligators love marshmallows, but they think that it looks like an egg. As I said, it's ill-advised to try to throw some food to an alligator to get it to come at you. If you leave it alone, it will leave you alone.
Yeah. Well, what about, you mentioned the Bogachitta. That's probably a good, if somebody's saying, where should I start in terms of a river? That's probably a good starter river, right?
Right.
What are some other places to point out for beginners?
Well, you can go out to Walmart or any store and get you a small kayak for $100 or $200. And those sit-in kayaks are perfect for things like Tapasaw Creek or some gentle stream, McGee's Creek maybe. Bogachitta, segments of it are are easily doable by novices. And segments of it, when you get a 50-mile trip, for instance, you can get a spot or two that can be challenging.
Mm-hmm.
But my advice for novices would be to start on a lake and progress to a gentle stream. And after you've got plenty of experience with that, you might progress to, say, the Pearl River, south of Jackson.
Mm-hmm.
Pearl River south of Jackson, and especially south of Mississippi as it gets into the swamps, is one of Ernest's favorite rivers, right? He described the 50-mile stretch between Jackson and Monticello, I think, as a sort of like John Ruskie did with the Mississippi, as a wilderness between the banks. You could never, in that stretch back in the day, you would never have a road crossing, so you'd see very few people. I think they have built a highway crossing over that segment now, but it's still a fabulous near wilderness.
That's great. Patrick, I wish we had more time. Thank you so much for your time today. We really appreciate it.
Thank you. I really appreciate getting to talk about paddling and about our new book, Paddleways of Mississippi.
Paddleways of Mississippi. It's on University Press of Mississippi. It's available in all your finer outlets, as well as directly from the press, and of course, all your online outlets as well. So right. Good luck with the book.
Thank you.
Thanks for listening to this MPB Think Radio podcast. MPB depends on support from listeners, so if you can, please contribute today at mpbonline.org.
Our goal at Everyday Tech is to keep your technology not only working, but working for you. I'm the host, Abram Nanny, and you can join me and my friends Wednesday mornings at 10 on MPB Think Radio, or search Everyday Tech on your favorite podcasting app, or download the MPB Public Media app.